Well, it's my pleasure to end the session by giving you some relatively simple and straightforward results from a relatively simple and straightforward agronomic trial that brings us back to the origins of the biochar movement, namely soil quality and agronomics. I'd like to recognize my co-authors. Robert Walter is my research specialist who did most of the work, and Mike Boyette, the source of our biochar in biological and agricultural engineering. So I'm going to tell you what I'm going to tell you, why biochar in North Carolina. I'll tell you about soils and sources. I'll talk about the trial that we carried out and are still carrying out. And I'll talk about the fact that biochar did affect a number of soil physical properties and improved, quality. It did have some positive effects on chemical properties, and then I'll tell you the bottom line was basically we had no effect on crop yield. So I'm going to go home now, and you can all go on to the meeting. And then I'll give you some conclusions and recommendations. So why in North Carolina, why biochar? Well, you're probably all familiar with this figure, which showed us, again, the origins of the biochar movement. Here we have corn growing really well in the Amazonian tropics. Here we have corn not growing very well in the Amazonian tropics. And we know that the difference now was because we have the Terra Preta Dandio soils, these darker soils on this side, and neighboring soils that had not been amended with biochar. So let's transfer that to North Carolina. So here we have the tropics. Why in North Carolina? Well, we have southeastern coastal plain soils that are relatively extensive, and they are very similar to some tropical soils. They might be considered subtropical. They're highly weathered. They're ultisols. They have low cation exchange capacity, low pH, low native fertility, low aggregate stability, low infiltration, low plant available water holding capacity. They can be very difficult for agronomic production without being amended. If you look at this soil profile, it's very similar to the one that we saw previously, this one right here. So we have very similar soils. They have high exchangeable aluminum, which is problematic in terms of toxicity. We have high annual temperature and rainfall, very similar to some tropical regions, which results in rapid oxidation of crop residue when we have low carbon in these soils. These coastal plain soils are relatively sandy, and they're subject to compaction and tillage pans, which is a problem, and they often require deep tillage relatively regularly to enhance production. Without them, you get a decrease in crop yield. And we find productivity gains on these soils if we get more efficient capture utilization and storage of available moisture. We have relatively good rainfall, but sometimes it's not very timely. We often have a droughty period in August during corn, and that's a problem at pollination. And so if we get more available water at that time of the season, we thought we might see some yield advantages. And biochar just might take care of all these things. It's the wonder amendment for soil. We also have a ready source of feedstock in North Carolina. We grow trees. It's the predominant vegetation. It's actually the predominant land use in North Carolina by far as forests. And so it's the climax vegetation. It grows naturally. It also grows in human plantations. And many of us think that for a place like North Carolina, that trees will be our most important biofuel crop in the future. As a result, there's been torrefier development. We already saw this torrefier. We already saw this torrefier previously. This is the one that Chris Hopkins has developed. And then this is one that was developed by Mike Boyette, my co-author. At the time we began this trial in 2008, there had been relatively little work with biochar in the southeastern coastal plain. And these two machines did not exist. So we didn't have a whole lot of biochar. Mike Boyette is hoping to extract volatile fuels. Chris Hopkins is developing biochar actually as a fuel, a low-emission fuel for our electric company. Both of these things have biochar as a byproduct. Here it's not really a byproduct. It's what they're actually seeking. But Mike Boyette is seeking to get biofuels out of wood chips and use the biochar as a byproduct. So he actually asked me to undertake this soil. This is the biochar that he made when he was working on the bench. It's relatively fine. We've had it ground to 2 millimeters to increase our chances of seeing something in the field. Origins are mixed hardwood chips, about 90% water. Biochar is made in a closed vesicle at atmospheric pressure, a temperature of about 650 degrees for about an hour and a half, and then it was ground to pass a 2.5 millimeter screen. So we began this trial in 2008 to determine the effects of biochar on crop growth, soil chemical and physical properties. It was at the Williamsdale Biofuel Field Laboratory, a new facility, North Carolina, and with the biofuels name there, we were encouraged to do this work at the laboratory. The soils there are pretty representative of the North Carolina coastal plain, Norfolk, which has been reclassified as Nabokko, a Goldsboro soil. These are fine loamy, for soil scientists, fine loamy, siliceous, subactive, thermic, oxyacquic, and aquic paleoudults. They are acidic and with low native fertility. They have low CEC of about 6 milliequivalents per 100 grams. They're sandy loam in texture. And they are, again, as I said, subject to compaction and tillage bans. They are representative of a lot of soils in the southeastern coastal plain, so it's a representative soil to try this on. A 5x2 factorial design, biochar at 5 rates, 0, 10, 20, 40, and 80 tons per hectare, and then we had a plus and minus complete fertilizer added to this. The fertilizer was added only in 2008. We just wanted to look at residual effects thereafter because biochar is thought to enhance residual effects of fertilizer. Randomized complete block design with 6 reps. You'll see why I had 6 reps in a minute. It's kind of a lot for a field trial. We didn't have a lot of biochar, so this trial took place in 1x1 meter microplots out in the field. The amendments were mixed in approximately 18 centimeters deep after conventional tillage, and then we had no-till thereafter. We then established a common coastal plain rotation with corn, followed by winter wheat, and then in the next summer, it's double crop with soybean. This is what the soil looks like without amendment. This is 20 tons per hectare, 40 tons per hectare, and 80 tons per hectare. You can see that it's getting increasingly dark. You can also see the problem that some other speakers have talked about. When it rains, you get biochar floating to the surface and accumulating because of its particle density. In this past winter, we sampled, we used a Ulan sampler to get intact cores, and that's what I'm going to talk about is our analysis of these cores and ground soil. Moisture release was done via pressure outflow system on intact cores at 6 pressures, 1, 5, 10, 20, 30, 47, kilopascals, and then we determined the bulk density after drying, and the soil then was ground to pass 2 milliliters to do the high pressure plate analysis at 3 pressures, 100, 500, and 1500 kilopascals. We looked at the drain upper limit, permanent wilting point, plant available water capacity. Drained upper limit is field capacity for those of you who are familiar with that. And then we fit a Van Genuchten model via Levenberg-Marcotte algorithm, which is my technician has become enamored with this and has done a lot of work with the statisticians using Proc and Lin. And then we determined pore size with capillary rise equation. We did the statistics using analysis of variance and mean separation in SAS-PROC mix with an alpha value of 0.05. So let's get back to the beginning for all you graduate students and a lot of folks. The first thing I want to bring you all back to is factorial design. Whenever you analyze the factorial design, what's the first thing you need to look at? You need to look at interaction. And as a journal editor, it's been my experience that this is the thing that most people don't do. So let's all look at this. There's no interaction, so that makes this analysis simple to explain to you. It was not significant for all physical properties. For fertilizer, it's not significant for everything except the drain upper limit. So that means we had no fertilizer effect on soil physical properties with the exception of field capacity, and we had a small decrease when we added fertilizer, and that's not a good thing. Fertilizer trends, increasing macro porosity, decreasing matrix porosity, and plant available water capacity. These are the Van Genuchten models. You can see that there are some differences here, especially at the low tension end of the spectrum, at saturation and the drained upper limit of field capacity. And then here at the wilting point, the differences are there, but not as well expressed in terms of what we see at this scale. We're going to tease these out now as we look in more detail. So let's look first at bulk density. At the low rates, no decrease until we get to 20. And then a relatively substantial decrease when we get to 40 and 80 tons per hectare. We get a 16% decrease. You may ask, we talked about the particle density of biochar. It's much less than particle density of mineral soils. Soil bulk density here, when it started out, was 1.34. Mineral density is probably much higher than that, around 2.6 is a common value. Our biochar had a weight per volume, I won't necessarily say particle density, but a weight per volume of 0.37 grams per cubic centimeter, so just dilution of soil bulk density with biochar may decrease the soil bulk density. Well, we estimated that by doing a calculation back in the envelope, estimated mixing biochar with the soil and seeing no compaction, and this is what we found. So this is what we would expect to have just on the basis of biochar addition and its lower particle density, and again, this is the experimental result. So this implies that we had something going on other than just dilution of bulk density, and the only thing that probably could have been going on was aggregation. And so we have the formation of aggregates. That's our first hypothesis. So the decrease due to biochar exceeded that expected by dilution alone. So let's look at total porosity, which is based on bulk density in this trial. You see that there's an increase in total porosity from something under 0.45 to up almost up to a half volumetric on a volumetric basis in terms of that related to biochar rates. A difference of about 14% and 6 centimeters. Let's talk about the components of that. Macropore is greater than 50 microns. We saw no significant difference, although you might say that there's a slight trend there for macropores as we added different rates of biochar. If we look now at what we call structural pores or mesopores, 3 to 50 microns, there was a statistically significant increase in that, about 30%, one of the biggest changes we've seen, a change in volumetric porosity of about 4 centimeters. For the matrix pores, the small ones, essentially no significant difference due to biochar. So all the activity, if we put all those things together, all the activity is essentially here in these structural meso-sized pores, 3 to 50 microns. Very little activity, if any, at macro, and very little activity in the matrix. Looking at the drained upper limit now, or field capacity, we have these split axes over here. Field capacity ranged from about 0.24.5 up to 0.29 with high rates of biochar. Obviously, we had a substantial increase. It's 17% increase, 4.3 centimeters. That's a substantial amount of water in North Carolina during the growing season. Permanent wilting point might be considered even more important during drought. We have a substantial increase in permanent wilting point. Notice, however, that we're talking about smaller units here, very high tension. So we have a 9 millimeter increase in the permanent wilting point in terms of the amount of water that's available, but it's still a 19% increase on a relative basis. Plant available water, this is what we're really concerned about, the difference between the drained upper limit and the wilting point. We had an increase of about 3 centimeters, about a 14% increase. That's a substantial amount. Again, that's more than an inch of water, and during a droughty period, that could mean the difference between good pollination and bad pollination for a crop like corn. And again, showing this relative to the total plant available water, all the activities was with the structural pores in terms of the tensions between 5 and 100 kilopascals. So we've been using the 5 kilopascal limit, which is that considered reasonable for soils, for sandy soils. Traditional ones are 33 or 10 kilopascals used for regular soils and for sandy soils by some other people. So we use the relatively moist version of plant available water going to the drained upper limit. Just to kind of summarize, I'm not going to show you much data about this, but to summarize the effects on soil chemical properties, at 10 and 20 tons per hectare, we saw no effect on routine soil test properties. At the higher rates, it increased all the things we hoped it would increase. Again, it's got liming value, and increased the pH, cation exchange capacity, base saturation, malic available nutrients, potassium, calcium, manganese, magnesium, sulfur. The sulfur effect has been transient over the 3 years that we've done the trial. The others are persistent. It has no effect on available phosphorus, zinc, or copper. And now we get back to the heart of the matter. Did it have any effect on grain yield? There was not much of an interaction between fertilizer and biochar in terms of grain yield, so we're just showing this averaged over fertilizer rates. This is corn. We only have 1 year of corn. We lost a year of corn because of drought and predation by deer. But you see there's no significant effect. There's a slight decrease here and here with the low rate and the highest rate of biochar. We don't know why that was. It's only a single year of corn. We have 2 years of wheat here. No significant effect on wheat. If anything, there's a decrease, if you will. No significant increase, certainly, for that. That's soybean. And no change for wheat, and for soybean, we had a small decrease. We have soybean in the field right now, and we're waiting to see whether we get similar results the second year with soybean. So, conclusions and recommendations. High rates of biochar improve several agronomically important physical parameters, bulk density, porosity, pore size distribution, and plant available water content. The same thing was true of many soil chemical properties, pH, CEC, base saturation, potassium, calcium, magnesium, sulfur, and manganese. Despite these improvements, biochar had no real positive effect on corn, wheat, or soybean yield. So future research, effects on native and or less well-managed soils. This was on a relatively well-amended soil. It had been in agriculture for many years. It was in a healthy winter wheat crop before we planted it to corn. People have asked, what if you took this to the Piedmont, where we have much higher clay content? We don't know. We might do that in the future. And then, obviously, there's the question of persistence of the carbon for sequestration. So the benefit may not be agronomic. It may be just in terms of carbon sequestration. And then we'd like to move to field trials rather than microplots because there was a high amount of variability in the microplots, particularly for yield, but not so much for the physical and chemical soil parameters. This was funded in part by North Carolina Small Grain Growers Association, and we thank them. And thanks to John Dale Garner and staff at the field laboratory for helping out with this trial. And with that, I'll take any questions. Yes, ma'am.
I'm not sure I caught. What was the soil
We did not. We only did superficial cores. So this is all from superficial cores. The biochar was tilled in about 18 to 20 centimeters by hand. Yes? We have not. In North Carolina and in humid southeast, it's typically very volatile. It's not used for as a soil test. For nitrogen fertilization, for example, we still don't have a good, reliable soil test for nitrogen fertilization in the southeast. Yes, sir?
If we simply return the biochar that we derived from the yield of biomass on a particular land area, what would those rates be? What's the ballpark? I noticed you went up to 80 megagrams.
Yeah, we're massive rates.
So what are the rates for simply just returning the char we derived from our biomass yield?
Well, let's do a back of the envelope. So we have good corn yield, 10 megatons per hectare. We got another 10 megatons, maybe a stover. So we're taking off 10 megatons, putting back 10 megatons. If we turn that into biochar, it's going to be about half that or less. And so 5 megatons would be what some people might say, again, back of the envelope, for a relatively high biomass crop like corn. Yes, sir?
Megagrams.
Pardon me?
Megagrams.
Megagrams, sorry. Tons of megagrams. Pat? Yeah.
So my question to you is if you're really going with all those good things going for you, what's the one thing you would try to do if you really had to enter that into a high yield contest? What do you think would might change?
The one thing I didn't tell you is that I think maybe the pH got a little too high. So that's the only one negative thing I can think of. Now, in terms of doing that in high yield contests, I'm not sure if I'd put anything on to bring the pH back down. I'm not sure what I would do. I don't think I'd use biochar in a high yield contest, frankly.
Well, you surely got a lot of the good things that I'm talking about trying to improve.
Yes.
And yet we didn't, and yet we know there are very high yielding soils in conditions in North Carolina. So you wonder what the heck's the difference.
The only thing I could think of is we had some problems with moisture during one of these seasons. Otherwise, these seasons were relatively good weather-wise for us in the southeastern coastal plain. So the physical properties probably might not express themselves unless there were droughtier periods. Yes?
I would suggest that one of the things is you have low organic matter soils than coarse soils, so inorganic fertilizers are not necessarily going to retain very well. Have you thought about doing future trials of organic fertilizers, organic matter? So the soil even were also amended with organicals beyond just char.
No, we haven't. Not a bad suggestion. Yes, the questions keep coming.
Yes, the last one.
the cores were taken intact. No, you can't do high pressure analysis with intact cores, so you have to grind them and sieve them at that point. Well, it was taken from the surface where I could say the majority of the roots are in terms of the superficial horizon. I think it's probably about the same through the part that we amended with biochar.
Okay.